Pocket Protectors Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at Brown Jason. Joined once again by the full crew. They're really smart guys that let me hang out with them a couple times a week. Dr. Eric Eager, what's going on, man?
Things are good, man. Last week was a bit of a setback. I was, kind of got excited when Sendejo was running that ball in to the red zone against the Panthers, but ultimately it didn't work out. But all in all, going 2-1 on that road trip, starting the season 10-3, can't really complain much.
Yep. And a busy man, Luke, not traveling this time, but, pulling double duty on podcast here, joining us late night. What's going on, my man? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm no longer living in a sea of smoke. That's good. The Vikings lost. That's less good.
Yeah. We'll take the fact that, you can go outside and like breathe and stuff. I mean,
Yeah.
That's kind of important.
It helps.
Yeah, it does help. And we have I guess for me anyway, it's a fun episode kind of lined up here because we had a very uncharacteristic Vikings game this past weekend here where, through the season, in many ways, the Vikings have been living a very charmed life. Our wide receivers, when you look at, most efficiency, metrics, both of our wide receivers were playing at a very, very high level, playing super efficient. Keenum, avoiding sacks at a really, 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 really high level. Defense not giving up explosive plays, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it seemed like all of those things went the other way in the game against the Panthers. Another thing, Keenum's maybe interceptable throws not necessarily being intercepted at a rate that we would expect throughout the rest of the season. And it seemed like a lot of those things that, often get chalked up as kind of as luck went the other way. And so a word that's been, tossed around a couple times and, Arif talked about it a little bit on the Norse Code podcast is regression. And so I know that, generally speaking, when people throw that word out, they're talking about something bad. And in this context, it seems as though everything that came up or that one might, put the word regression next to is something that was not positive for the outlook of our team. But I guess I wanted to have a little conversation with you guys about, what is regression? What does that mean? And really, most importantly, I guess, if you're a Vikings fan, what does it mean for us as we move forward in the rest of the season? Does this game have anything to do with what's going to happen in the future in terms of, guys kind of, coming back to their mean or anything like that? So I guess, with that lead in, Eric, I'll kick it to you first. And what is this regression thing we keep hearing so much about?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Regression comes from the idea of like fitting a statistical model to data. And so basically, like, let's say that you had a curve that was trying to describe sort of the height of a person's offspring based upon the height of the father. What folks found a while back was that like really tall men had offspring that were tall, but not as tall as them. And that kind of idea, that's where like the term regression came from. The same thing's true about really short men. They have short, offspring, but not offspring as short as them. And, so that's kind of where the regression comes from. So if you're looking at like the Vikings and like they've had a lot of really good things happen to them, right? Case Keenum has had a really good season this season so far in almost any way that you slice it. So then the question is his next offspring, which would be his next game, we would expect it to be pretty good, and PFF, graded it pretty well, despite, I think, some of the results. But was it as good as the season, that he had, made us accustomed to? No. Vikings receivers have had a really good season. Do they have a good season on – or do they have a good game on Sunday? No. And they're still good. Like, Adam Thielen made some fantastic plays, Stephon Diggs as well, but there was some, like, regression there. Now, not a whole lot about the Vikings has been really poor. And so, you know, we're not going to see a lot of, like, you know, regressing to the mean or reverting to the mean that way. But if you look at, like, some teams that have played poorly this season, for example, Denver, they you know, hadn't even won or covered in, like, 2 months, and then they go and shut out the Jets. That would be an example of regression kind of in the other direction. But for the Vikings, you know, a lot of things have gone well. And so when we talk about regression, that just means this sort of inevitable, what goes up must come down a little. And so for the Vikings, for example, you know, their receivers had dropped the lowest number of targets for Case Keenum among all qualifying quarterbacks this year. Last week it was the highest, right? So you see some of those, like, sort of weird things happen. Latavius Murray had been a really good running back after contact last, you know, this entire sort of since he became a starter. And a lot of those processes were still true against the Panthers. He had negative 10 yards before contact, but this week he only had 24 yards, a little over 2 yards a carry after contact, as opposed to the 3 or 4 yards a carry we saw with him against Detroit, for example. So, you know, just some of those things that went up came down for the Vikings. And, you know, statistically speaking, that is to be expected.
So when we look at, you know, these things, they came down for this one game where kind of it seemed like everything went wrong for us all at one time. And so because, you know, Minnesota sports, I guess, and Vikings fans just kind of bracing for the inevitable collapse, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, many have kind of started to paint future doomsday scenarios based on kind of everything going wrong in this game. And that now meaning that kind of we're doomed going forward because, you know, the wheels have fallen off. Statistically speaking, is that an accurate way to kind of look at this? Is this a blip on the radar, or is this the start of a new and negative outlook or trend for the Vikings?
I don't know the answer to that question without, like, looking a lot deeper into the Panthers game than I've looked at it. But I feel like with a game like this, you can learn a lesson about, like, how to measure quality of play. Because the thing about this game, this Panthers game, was, like, the amount of mistakes the Vikings made. I think if you had a way to track just, like, generically how many players screwed up on how many plays, I don't think this game would be that far outside the realm of the rest of the season. I think that the mistakes they made were more impactful this time. But I don't think that they suddenly turned into, like, a very bad team. I mean, it was a good team at home. That's not exactly the hottest take of, you know, you lost by one score to a good team in their house. You know, you didn't play that bad. But, like, I think if you're looking at thing, you know, it's like the one thing about most analytics and most statistics that we haven't really figured out a good way to solve is that they're still based on the result. That Cam Newton 62-yard run, I'd really only say two people made a huge mistake on that play. I think Anthony Barr left his gap and Andrew Sendejo took a bad angle. Everybody else played fine. So on that play, that level of screw-uppery doesn't usually cost you 62 yards. I think back to a play I'm going back to. I think it was in 2014. A Thursday night game against Aaron Rodgers, and it was right after Teddy Bridgewater started, but he hurt his ankle, so Christian Ponder played in that game, and we got the crap kicked out of us. There was a touchdown in that game to Jordy Nelson where I think, like, four different players screwed up. Harrison Smith, you know, didn't play very well. Xavier Rhodes gave outside leverage when he shouldn't have. Sendejo was late to the play. Robert Blanton was late to the play. Like, a bunch of people screwed up, and it was this big log touchdown. That's what usually those big plays look like. The Vikings have been really good this year at preventing big plays like that because they're really good at avoiding plays where, you know, three or four players make a mistake at the same time. And sometimes it only takes two players to screw up for, you know, a 62-yard run to happen from the quarterback. Sometimes it only takes one player to screw up, like the Jonathan Stewart touchdown. It really only one guy got out of his gap. I think it was Barr, if I remember correctly. And because of the defensive alignment, nobody else was there to clean it up because it was a third and short play. So everybody was, like, way close up to the line. So that's the kind of play that doesn't often turn into a huge play, but it did this time. So I think it just kind of teaches us a lesson about, like, how to measure play and how to, like, parse when things like this happen. And we gave up, I think this was our worst run defense game of the year. I don't think we've given up more yards rushing than we did in this game. And if you look at why that happened, if you look at the process and use that to contextualize the results, you can kind of see that, like, this isn't exactly the kind of, like, this doesn't portend some sort of doom where we suddenly are a bad run defense. It's just that there's a huge amount of variance in terms of, like, when you make a mistake on defense, how impactful that ends up being. And that's just kind of the nature of football. That's why football's a high variance game and why you get things like the Miami Dolphins beating the New England Patriots every damn year.
And what you just kind of touched on there, and especially as it relates to defense, because Eric, before we started recording, you kind of mentioned something along a similar vein that I wanted to kind of get your input on Luke's take there, where you're saying just with defense, it's really hard to kind of have that be the thing you rely on week over week over week over week. So given that the Vikings have been really so good at doing so many things defensively, like eliminating big plays, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is it more likely that they're able to kind of keep going doing that and staying, you know, with that, you know, really above average level of play defensively, where kind of everyone's working in sync? Or is it more likely just kind of on a general basis that we see some more of the variance that Luke was talking about there, kind of as we move forward? Like, how do you look at that? I guess how sticky is defensive performance from week to week as you go through a season?
Yeah, I mean, Luke brought up a great point. Like, the Vikings were undone in many ways by the run defense. And I will tell you that run defense, you know, Luke, you can, as the Vikings showed, you can lose a game by giving up big plays in the run game. However, being good against the run or being bad against the run is not indicative of being a good or bad defense. So you look at this season, the bottom eight teams against the run this year are the Patriots, the Chargers, the Rams, the Jaguars, the Saints, the Steelers, the Falcons, and the Chiefs are the one through eight worst defenses yards per carry allowed. Hopefully all eight of those teams make the playoffs. That is, you know, so in one sense, you're talking about half of the, you know, if you're talking about 50-50 run pass split, half of the game is this sort of like not sticky, high variance, low predictive stuff. Right. And to me, that's why, you know, when you talk about defense, and I think Matthew Coller wrote something about this in the offseason, but like it's very difficult for a team like the 2015 Denver Broncos to sustain a Super Bowl caliber defense for long enough for it to really matter. Or even like, you know, one of the juggernauts we've seen is the kind of the Pete Carroll Seattle defenses. And really their heyday was about 3 years. Because right now I think mostly they're riding on the coattails of their quarterback. So, you know, to me, you look at that and you say, okay, like the Vikings gave up two big plays in the run game. For the most part, they didn't blink, right? They gave up that first touchdown to Stewart. They drove down, they scored a touchdown. They gave up, you know, some more play. They gave up a play to Funchess. You know, the Vikings against the pass the other day were not terrible. Cam Newton was like one of the least accurate quarterbacks in the league last week. So, you know, against the pass, they gave up some stuff. But, you know, all in all, I think their defense, the process was fine there. So I'm willing to sort of chalk something like giving up run plays to Jonathan Stewart, giving up that run play to a quarterback at the end of the game. I'm willing to sort of chalk that up to variance, especially given the fact that, like, you know, you look at the teams, like I said, that are really good in team defense against the run. And you look at some of these teams that are really good against the run, you know, the Cleveland Browns, the Denver Broncos, the Tennessee Titans, the Cardinals, Eagles, Vikings, 49ers. It's far more of like sort of a mixed bag in terms of whether those teams are going to be successful this year.
So I guess tell us, what should we expect kind of as we move forward? Is everything going to be all right? Are we going to kind of bounce back as we move through the rest of the season? Because I know, Luke, you've mentioned a couple times that you fear potentially the quote-unquote trap game, you know, with this game with Cincinnati. Everyone everywhere has us as huge favorites. I think, Eric, you said 12 points is where the line is right now as we kind of move into this next game. Are we kind of looking at this as a bounce back where everything kind of gets back on track for the Vikings in the season? And or is it still possible that just with the high variance nature of football that, you know, maybe another game like last week happens? I guess what should we kind of look at as we move forward with things here with the Vikings, especially with this next game that's coming up with Cincinnati? I guess, yeah, Luke, you can go first on that one.
Yeah, the trap game thing is more of a less of a substantiated thing that I've like researched. It's more of just a weird gut feeling that I have that I don't really have any backup for. I don't like that we just came off this huge gauntlet of tough road games and now we get an easy home game. Like, it feels like the kind of situation where a team could let down its guard. But that said, I do have a lot of confidence in the coaching and their ability to like not fall for that. But in terms of variance, I would definitely lean to the side of like not being too worried after this. For me, this game didn't move the needle on the Vikings at all. I think there were some people who were too high on the Vikings that got brought down. But this one didn't really change things for me because like if you say have a game over 10 games, you have 100 good plays, 100 big explosive plays, and you have 10 games in which they happen and you distribute them randomly, you're not going to have 10 good plays in each game, 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. You're going to have 15 sometimes, you're going to have 5 sometimes. That's how variance works. That's, you know, when you look at a bell curve, that's what that means. That sometimes there's outliers. Most of them are going to be around 10, but then sometimes there's outliers. This seems like the kind of game where more of our bad plays happen to fall in this game than will fall in the rest of the games. That's the biggest reason that I don't feel particularly worried. I also, just watching that game, the Panthers played really well, and they're a good team at home, and they earned a tough, gritty W. Like, I'd feel a lot different if we got blown out 33-10 and they were just, like, destroying us and we were totally out of the game. We hung in there against a good team on the road that doesn't really worry me a whole lot. And when you really look at the nuts and bolts of why that happened, it was kind of the same performance we put up week after week after week. And the Panthers were just able to take advantage of the weaknesses in our game more than other teams have been able to.
And so that's this is kind of going off the regression path a little bit, but you know, the Panthers, they look a lot like a team that we would see in the playoffs. So I guess, is there any predictive power in that sort of thing that when you look at, you know, how the Vikings have played against, you know, maybe some of the weaker competition they faced, you know, season to date, and then you get a game against, you know, some of these tougher teams where, you know, obviously we went and we beat Atlanta, you know, tight, low scoring game. We have this game against the Panthers where obviously things don't go our way. When you're looking at trying to assess a team, because at this point, I think most of us are looking forward to, you know, what the Vikings are going to do in the playoffs. Does this sort of game you know, lend any sort of a view into the future as to how we will perform in those sort of matchups, given, you know, how we perform this late in the season against a team like Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, so the Vikings are still, like, I guess the Vegas favorites to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. And at the same time, their odds are less than 50%, right? Because, you know, there are 6 teams, all of which are good teams vying for that spot. And, you know, I think that that's important to note, right? Like, there are other teams, like, so if you're the Vikings, you'd much rather have the regression of performance happen than the regression of injury, for example, like the Eagles had. And so when you look at that, though, I think it's important, right? Because it's clear that a lot of Vikings fans, as you guys have said, were not quite certain the Vikings could lose again. And Sunday provided a blueprint for how they could lose. And while it's not the only blueprint for how they could lose, it was one of them. And I think, you know, for example, one of the traps the Vikings fans got into, for example, in 1998 was thinking, you know, it's inevitable. We're going to get to the Super Bowl. We're going to play the Denver Broncos, and it's going to be a great game, right? And not sort of seeing sort of if the dominoes fall a certain way, how they could lose to the Falcons, for example, or even the Cardinals before that in that season. So, you know, none of these things are sure things. Like I said, the Vikings are the odds-on favorite to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, and there's still a better-than-average chance that they're not going to make it. So, you know, one of those ways that we saw it was against the Panthers, where they give up some run plays, they have some turnovers, they don't move the ball particularly well on the ground. They get regression in terms of health along the offensive line, and so on and so forth. I think that that's important for Vikings fans and people for, you know, for example, people that are betting on the Vikings, things like that, to heed, right? Those are important things. It's not a sure thing. It's a good bet, but it's not a great bet.
We also learn a lesson about sample size here too. Like, this game did provide a blueprint, and there's absolutely a chance that this game repeats itself in a playoff scenario. One thing I did see that I want to touch on is that the team was down 11 in the middle of the fourth quarter and actually did make that like spirited comeback, which is really, really nice to see, because I think Vikings teams of old didn't do that. But from a more analytic perspective, you know, there's a sample size thing here, right? Like, if you just take the sample of the last 10 games, which would be the eight game winning streak, the loss to Detroit, and this loss, you're going to see a lot more good than you're going to see bad, which kind of gives you like I think a more predictive model of like how well the Vikings play. At the same time, sample size rears its ugly head in the playoffs because it only takes one bad game to eliminate you and end your season. If you were to extrapolate, like if you could tell the future and you could tell, okay, the Vikings are going to play three playoff games. If you look at the three Vikings games or the three playoff games the Vikings would play, the divisional, the NFC Championship, and the Super Bowl, and you could say, okay, the last two they're going to play really, really well, but the first one they're not going to play well. Well, that's a first round exit. And that, so while sample size does kind of tell us, hey, they have a better chance of winning in the playoffs, sample size also makes it really hard to win in the playoffs, which I think is a contributing factor to like, yeah, there's six teams in the NFC, and while they're the most likely team right now to exit the NFC and go to the Super Bowl, that doesn't make it a likely outcome. And that's just the nature of single elimination playoffs with 12 teams in it.
Anna, you brought up sample size, and you know, obviously we couldn't have an episode where we talk about regression without obviously talking about Case Keenum, because you know, kind of early in the season, as you know, you're looking at Case Keenum and how he's playing. One of the things that came up pretty often there was, you know, when you look at Case's prior, you look at his career versus how he's playing this season, there's a high likelihood that he will, you know, regress back to looking more like the Case Keenum that, you know, we've been accustomed to seeing over the first, you know, 30 or so games of his career. So as we continue to add information to, you know, Case Keenum and his profile as an NFL quarterback, given how he's playing now, how much has the needle shifted on him? And if there is regression, is it still kind of what we would be thinking about from earlier in the season? Or is it possible that if there is a dip, it wouldn't be something as pronounced as maybe somewhere we're thinking, just based on how he's been able to, you know, kind of take advantage of his situation and elevate his level of play as time has gone along?
Yeah, I mean, I think Keenum has demonstrated in his game versus Green Bay, in his game versus Baltimore, in some degrees, you know, versus Cleveland, that the Vikings can win with him playing kind of average football at the quarterback position. And then, interestingly, he's proven in games against Washington, Detroit, to some degree Los Angeles, that they can win with him playing above average football at the quarterback position. And, you know, the weird thing is, as we talk about samples, is like we've gotten stunted by the fact that he strung a few of those games in both, whether they be average or above average, he strung those games together as opposed to dispersed them sort of equally. And I think that that's important to realize. So if Case Keenum doesn't play a great game in the playoffs, he might be facing Nick Foles and, you know, they might win, you know, or he could play, you know, a lights out game against a team like the Falcons, and Matt Ryan might bring it that game and they might lose. His best bullets might not be good enough. So I think it's clear right now that Case Keenum, you know, has the cards in his deck to push the Vikings through an NFC where there's not like this elite level quarterback play at the moment. I mean, Russell Wilson is playing pretty well. Matt Ryan's a former MVP, that kind of thing. But the games in which Keenum is going to be unable to elevate the Vikings are going to be games where players like Wilson and Ryan play two Sigma games. They play outlier games themselves. If he plays, you know, average to kind of above average for him, the Vikings will have a shot to win all those games.
I think we've seen enough passing attempts this year from Case Keenum to know generally how well we can expect him to play. think we can probably get a decent idea of like how many throws of his we can expect to be accurate and how many we can expect to be inaccurate, how many we can expect to be on time and how many we can expect to be late. And I don't think I think that's actually pretty sticky from game to game. I think it's more the impacts of those things that vary wildly. In a playoff scenario, I can probably predict with reasonable accuracy that Case Keenum is going to throw a similar number of inaccurate passes and a similar number of just like, wow, elite, holy crap throws. And I think what we can't predict is whether or not that's going to lead to a win and whether or not, you know, who was it? The safety, DJ Swearinger, is going to, you know, pick off that low velocity late throw, or if it's going to be like the Diggs play in this game, the drop, I think it counted as a Diggs drop, but that ball was late and pretty slow and could have been a pick if the player broke on it better, or if it's going to be something like, on the other side, the Mackenzie Alexander play from this game where he went for the interception and didn't get it, and then it turned into a huge yak play. That is stuff that we can't predict nearly as well, but we can predict that, like, hey, those out routes are going to be slow, and sometimes it'll be okay, sometimes it won't. Hey, he's going to throw, you know, these absolute dimes over the middle of the field, like the Rudolph touchdown or the Thielen touchdown. We can't predict whether or not those are going to turn into touchdowns, but we can predict that those will probably be good throws. So in a playoff scenario, that's what makes it difficult to predict. But I do think we know generally who Case Keenum is, and I don't think that that's changed much game to game, even though the stats have.
I like it. And apparently he played his best game of the season this past week. Strange. Bizarre.
Are you going to make me defend that grade, James?
I will not. I will not. I am petty. I'm not that petty, though.
There have been times, like, you guys are my friends, so I will go into the play-by-play grade and try to explain. There was, you know, you guys remember when Xavier Rhodes was, you know, they were posting up 49 grades for Xavier Rhodes, and I would go in and say, okay, well, that play, he did get beat, but Mike Evans dropped it, so it makes sense to give him a negative grade and that kind of thing. As you guys know, I don't grade the games. I'm mostly the data analyst, but I do get surprised by the grades sometimes. So I don't think I've ever been a guy who has talked down to people who are, you know, questioning the grades, because I do myself. So you know, that was one that was surprising to me. My friend and colleague Steve Palazzolo on the podcast said that, you know, Case Keenum threw some of his best passes this week on incompletions. And so, you know, I watched the game live. I have not watched it back. I'd have to go back and see whether or not I think that's true. But, you know what? I think Luke, you know, says I think Luke's point is well taken here. And to relate it back to some other Vikings quarterbacks that have been put in positions to start playoff games, Tavares Jackson is an example of a player that we needed his outlier game just to give us a chance, right? You know, Brett Favre was not in that category, but Christian Ponder, we needed Christian Ponder's outlier game in the theoretical playoff game he would have played against Green Bay for them to have a chance. Same thing with Joe Webb at the time and Gus Frerotte, right? Like those guys. I think Keenum has firmly put us in position where we know kind of a distribution where he'll play, and a fair amount of those sample points are going to be such that the Vikings are going to have a chance to win a game. And, you know, to start a season with, you know, a backup quarterback starting week two, I think I got them the most likely outcome is 12-4 this year. Having that be the outcome, having a chance to win a Super Bowl in their home stadium. I mean, like, we give Case Keenum, I think, a fair amount of fairness in kind of both, you know, we like Teddy a lot, obviously, especially myself. But we give Case Keenum a little bit of both sides. I think just being able to say that out loud speaks volumes of how well he's played, especially relative to some of the quarterbacks the Vikings have trotted out there recent seasons.
Yep, that's definitely fair there. And I guess the last question, just kind of as it pertains to Case and quarterback evaluation just in general. You know, given that I think that everyone, even, you know, the staunchest Case Keenum supporter, would be, you know, honest in their assessment that, you know, there's a lot going well or has been going well in terms of the surrounding pieces that have helped Keenum kind of elevate his game. And he's taken advantage of the situation. When we look at something like this, because when we evaluated Case Keenum and you're looking at kind of the priors and saying that, you know, those are the things that maybe would point to some regression or whatever it might be, how kind of looking forward do we separate the surroundings of a quarterback and what we expect them to do given their surroundings versus where they may have been in a different environment with surroundings that were not as good as the surroundings they find them in now, or even vice versa?
I don't know if there's a great way to like measure that, because even like the way that we measure wide receiver performance, I think the best stat, my favorite stat for wide receiver performance is yards per route run on PFF Elite. But even that is like yards, right? That and if the quarterback throws a horribly inaccurate pass, you can't get those yards, and that's not your fault. So really, no matter how you like adjust and look at production, at some point it's always going to be intrinsically linked, the quarterback play and the wide receiver play. So it's really hard to measure that. I think right now the best tool we have in our arsenal is to look at, you know, the quarterback stats that we trust, like just net yards per attempt or QBR or grade or whatever, and then just kind of be thoughtful about it, even though that's a little bit more nebulous and it's not maybe not the best method for like getting an accurate assessment of how much a supporting cast affects the quarterback or whatever. I think that doesn't mean forget the whole thing entirely. You know, if you see, Case Keenum had 120 passer rating, but threw a lot of inaccurate passes that the wide receivers bailed him out on, which has happened, like it's okay to say that sentence and then have that be your evaluation. With Case specifically, it's tough to make this statement based off of only like one bad supporting cast game, but perhaps there is an underlying factor of like he lives and dies by his supporting cast, right? The supporting cast had a bad game this game. There were drops, the offensive line got hurt, and his play dropped off, and more than you wish it would, you know, in those adverse circumstances. I do agree with PFF. I'm not sure I agree with the grade as a whole, but I do agree that like some of his best throws were those incompletions in the, there were like three incompletions in the end zone that were all very good throws. And then that really bad Rudolph drop up the seam that Tony Romo kept talking about. All of those were great throws that were incomplete.
Well, that is pretty much what I had for you guys today, I guess. Eric, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think this loss is an interesting thing for the Vikings. We haven't been, I mean, the last time the Vikings lost a game, Dalvin Cook was the starting running back. And, you know, the Lions were about to become a 3-1 team. You know, it was September, maybe early October, right? So like so much has happened, right? And we haven't been able to sort of critically look at the Vikings without the sort of disclaimer that, oh yeah, they won. And so I think that this is a good thing to look at the Vikings and say, you know, they played a tough, hard-fought game and lost, and that's possible. And so unlike the 1998 Vikings, which I always sort of go back to, if they lose in the playoffs, we're not going to be surprised. And at the same time, you know, they still are a favorite in the NFC. So I think that, you know, if you're a Vikings fan, this is a pretty cool time. So cherish it.
I am with you 100% on that one. If you're not enjoying this season, I don't know if you want to continue to watch football. Like,
find a different sport, maybe.
This is fun. Enjoy this.
And on top of the 98 Vikings, the 2009 Vikings, I think, were undone because teams kind of figured them out down the stretch. They went 2-3 down the stretch, and it seemed like they just kind of lost a lot of momentum. And teams seemed to kind of be able to figure them out. I would love for a coach to go pull this game up and then say, oh, option football works on the Vikings, because it usually doesn't. And I would love for a team to come in with an option-heavy game plan against the Vikings and just watch it fall flat.
Nick Foles read option incoming.
Let's go.
Nick Foles season with a Z.
Let's do it. Well, Eric, what are you working on this week? What can we expect from you here in the not too distant future?
Yeah, it's a so we have the PFF ELO rankings out. The Vikings are a top 10 team as usual. I think probably somewhere around six this week. We have the PFF spread picks coming out. Not a whole lot. I mean, the Vikings are double digit favorites this week, so that's really hard to kind of lay points like that. So I don't really have a nice advice there. I guess would say that there's some really cool games this week I'm looking forward to. Pittsburgh versus New England, Kansas City versus the Los Angeles Chargers, Seattle versus the Los Angeles Rams. So a lot of really nice games this weekend that'll have, playoff and cascading sort of implications. So, despite the fact that even Carolina Green Bay, if you can stomach watching the green and gold, I guess. So, even though the Vikings game this week hopefully is going to be a boring one, the rest of the NFL is going to be a compelling display of football.
Awesome. And Luke, obviously, I know you recently recorded something here that'll be dropping pretty soon. But anything else we should be on the lookout for? Any articles that you've dropped recently?
Yeah, check out the Purple Journal as always. On Purple PTSD, I wrote about why the Vikings should go for two all the time. And I laid out an argument. I'm definitely not the first person to lay out an argument like that. And I draw on Kevin Cole's work at Predicted Football and also a good 538 piece about it. But also just the fact that the Vikings are very good at short yardage situations and not very good at kicking extra points.
Kaiser so for bad.
Yep. Sweep that leg.
I like that the Vikings actually listened to Eric, because, Eric was there on Twitter being like, whatever happens the next time the Vikings score, they better go for two. And you know what? They didn't want those problems. So when they did score, they went ahead and they went for two because they didn't want Eric making that drive down there to have a talk with anyone. So, they read the tweets. Shermer definitely reads the tweets. He understands what's going on there. Yeah. Well, go ahead, man.
Yeah, I mean, I would go for two a lot more. I mean, if you're down if you're down five with even in the third quarter, I would still go for it. So that was kind of the point of the tweet. But, good for them. Good for Blake Bell, right?
Yeah, we'll be getting a lot of Blake Bell this coming week, it looks like.
Starting tight end, Blake Bell.
Starting tight end, the Belldozer, coming to a place near you. And then since, Luke, you mentioned it, maybe I guess we're going to have a future episode where we talk about momentum and if that's actually a thing or not. Since
that would be really interesting because
that tends to be hotly debated amongst folks. But I think that wraps it up for this episode. We touched on everything we wanted to. Gentlemen, thanks once again for joining me on this this late night recording of the Pocket Protectors podcast. And y'all have a good night.
Cheers.
Take care.